Welcome to Untangled, a show from All Sides and WOSU that takes a complicated topic and untangles it for you, pulls it apart and weaves it back together in ways that are easy to understand. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. This season, we're untangling caregiving because the reality is that all of us will need care or become a caregiver at some point in our lives. It's a part of growing old. And while caregiving can be fulfilling, it also comes with backbreaking work and an emotional drain. It can feel isolating, heavy with guilt, responsibility, and even fear about whether you're making the right choices. Our first guest this hour understands the challenges of caregiving firsthand. Jenny Carlson is the AARP State Director for Ohio. Welcome to All Sides, Jenny.
Thank you so much. I'm pleased to be here.
Could you start by just telling us a bit about your personal experience as a caregiver and what brought you there?
Yes. And so when I took the role as state director of AARP in Ohio about 7 months ago, I said at the time that my dedication to the organization's mission and resolve to advocate for policies supporting older adults and their family comes as much from my personal career as much as providing direct care to my loved ones. And so I wanted to take you back a little bit. About 5 years ago, we moved my mother back from Florida, where she was retiring, and she wasn't doing very well. And so she's suffered from personal challenging physical challenges. She had a heart attack, a stroke. We were taking care of her here. She was living on her own. Then we went into the pandemic. And as you know, the pandemic was challenging for a lot of folks. And so she was suffering from social isolation. She was alone. She created her own little bubble. Even though we lived 10 minutes away from her, it was challenging. And we just wanted to make sure she was safe. So we made, quite honestly, a hard decision as a family to sell our home, move her in with us about 10 minutes away from us. It was my daughter's senior year in high school. And so we moved into a home where she found her own independence. We could put our eyes and hands on her on a daily basis to make sure she was remaining healthy. And we moved her into our family home that was intergenerational. And I think that's really important to note. We have two kids. And then we also moved her in with my husband. So it was a big adjustment as a family. But, you know, I'm pleased to say that my mother, she's 87, she's doing well. But it takes a village. And so, you know, being a family caregiver, it's staying on top of making sure my mother's taking her medicine, that she's having, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables. She's eating a healthy meal. Because of her healthcare condition, she's on a low sodium restricted diet. So we eat a little bit differently. I think it's all good for the family, and it's certainly good for Penny, my mother.
So whenever you decided, I'm going to move my mom in with us, I mean, I know that partially related to the pandemic, but a lot of people make this decision for a lot of reasons. You became her caregiver. So define caregiver for us, because you're mentioning, you know, cooking meals, you're mentioning what making sure she takes her medication. There's lots of different levels of caregiving.
Yeah, and I love that question because most people don't understand that they're actual caregivers. And so it's being that health champion. It's, you know, my mother is not completely proficient with electronics, and so we've set up her electronic medical record. I have power of attorney, so I'm able to interface with her physician. And that's important. Many people don't understand that caregivers can do that on behalf of their loved ones. So I get in to make sure that she's taking her medicine, that her medication's on an automatic refill, that she is getting to her wellness checks, getting to her appointments, you know, her specialty services, making sure that they're scheduled in a way that is convenient to a working, you know, couple. I'm working, my husband's working as well, so we juggle. And so it's managing healthcare. It's making sure she's getting out and staying safe and active. So you have to have an active mind. You have to have an active body. And so Penny's exercise on a, you know, every other day I take her out. And so we go to Kroger's and we go shopping together, and she grabs onto her grocery cart and goes up and down the aisles, and she's enjoying it. She's getting that interaction with other people too, and she's staying healthy. But it's also making sure that where she's going, it's a safe environment. And so we make sure that she's walking on stable sidewalks and in the streets where we drive up, that they're clear and that she doesn't have any challenges getting in and out of wherever she's going. Because there are those like steady places where she likes to go, you know, her places where she likes to go. Like she loves a dollar store, for example. And so we go there. We go there every week. We go to Kroger. We go to other grocery stores. And then we go to the bank, you know, and so and then she likes to go to the library, too.
But you don't have to necessarily live with the person to be their caregiver, too.
Caregivers can
be the check-in person as well. Right?
That's right. And that's really important because as a society, we need to start thinking about what can we do to make sure that we're helping our communities because there's a lot of people that are aging. We're an aging society. And so checking in on your loved ones, checking in on your neighbors to make sure that they don't need anything. And then if you're going out, you know, check in to see if, hey, can I grab something for you? Because it's, you know, those little burdens become much more complex as you age.
So tell me about how this personal experience you have with as being a caregiver is influencing your work with AARP, because I have to think one is not exclusive of the other.
It isn't. And I can tell you that is exactly why I took the position, because I saw how things were challenging and being that healthcare coach, being that, you know, chief of transportation, chief dietitian, chief, you know, planning her whatever she's doing to make sure she's socially connected with her family and friends. And so that is top of mind. And as the state director, we're really digging deep into caregiving issues this year. We're looking at housing. You know, we moved my mom from, you know, a quasi-safe environment into a home where we reside, and we wanted to make sure that she has the necessary grab bars and supports living on a first floor master and being able to navigate. And so a lot of that is home and community-based services and making sure that the state budget, which is in full swing right now, the state is actually scrutinizing, you know, what is being proposed by the administration. And so we're going to dig deep into those issues. In fact, I'm testifying on the state budget on Wednesday of this week around the Department of Aging budget. And then it's pocketbook issues. You know, when people age, you pay into Social Security. Most people pay into Social Security when they work, and they should be entitled to what you're paying in. But that's not necessarily the case because there's unplanned expenditures. And so I'm very concerned about, you know, as we age, are people completely ready and prepared to age at a time and place that we're going as a society.
This is Untangled from All Sides, and we're talking about caring for the caregiver this hour with Jenny Carlson, AARP State Director of Ohio. Now, I read on your website that AARP is asking Congress to support a tax credit for caregivers. Can you talk about what this means and how it would help?
Yes. So family caregivers are carrying out increasingly complex tasks that they're not trained for. And so we talked a little bit about, you know, medications, changing dressings, handling medical equipment. Many times they're taking on roles as a care manager. And so there's a lot of out-of-pocket expenditures for family caregivers. And we know that family caregivers spend on average more than $7,200 annually. And that's, in some cases, up to 26% of their income. And people can't afford that. And so we also know 60% of family caregivers are juggling their caregiving responsibility with paid work. So we are chiefly advocating for an initiative, and that is an initiative that Ohio Representative Mike Carey has sponsored. He's our hometown congressman. The legislation is called Credit for Caring Act, and that offers family caregivers in Ohio and throughout the nation up to $5,000 non-refundable federal tax credit. So if you're working and you're a caregiver and you have out-of-pocket expenditures above that $2,000 minimum threshold, you can claim 30% of your expenditures up to $5,000. And that is really, really important. I can tell you personally as a caregiver, we're paying that $7,200 out-of-pocket and even more so. And then when you think about individuals that have complex care needs, individuals who might be veterans or suffering from Alzheimer's, their needs are a lot more complex and expensive. And so this is a good strategy to be able to address the needs of working individuals who are caregivers, keep them gainfully employed and incentivized to be able to provide what their needed loved ones need in the communities.
Is it hard to put a number on it? Do we know how many people are caregivers taking care of an elderly relative?
Yeah, that's a great question. I do think these are conservative numbers because most people don't understand what the definition of a caregiver is. So I can give you top line numbers. Of the 48 million Americans who are family caregivers, there are more than 1.5 million in the state of Ohio. And these are family caregivers that provide 1.4 billion hours of care and up to 21 billion of unpaid labor per year. And that means, again, they're managing, they're prepping meals. It is a lot. And I think when people take a step back and if they anticipate, are you going to become a caregiver? We know that 78% of Ohio voters have already been caregivers or anticipate becoming caregivers. That's more than one in five Ohio voters right now. That 1.5 million are caregivers. And as the population continues to age, there's going to be more and more caregivers that are going to stand up and pay attention to it. I also wanted to talk about common assumptions. These family caregivers are for the most part not baby boomers and Gen Xers like myself. You know, we've got one in four family caregivers who are millennials, and these are currently aged 28 to 43. 40%
taking care of maybe their grandparents?
Yes. Yeah, loved one down the street, neighbor. Then you've got 40% are men, and 40% represent multicultural communities. And so that begins to dive deeper into the need to be very diverse in programmatic activity on the community level.
I was going to ask you about the men and women. Are most caregivers women for the most part? But no, yeah. Not necessarily?
Well, no, there is a strong correlation between that and also longevity, because women are outliving men. And so it stands to reason there's more women caregivers in our communities. And so, and then again, you know, we talked a little bit about dementia and other cognitive disorders. And so 75% of family caregivers right now are addressing those needs. And those are a little bit more complex because you want to make sure that you have those memory recall, you're going through the right training, you've got the resources at your fingertips, because you don't necessarily think about how you're going to provide for a loved one when they have the early on stage signs of dementia, like my mother. So it's little notes. It's making sure that she's taking her medicine. That's going to be really important as she aged. And
now you were able to keep your full-time job while taking care of your mother. Do you have any idea of how many people have to quit their jobs in order to be a full-time caretaker?
Yeah, so that's where AARP is extraordinarily concerned about this. You know, we've got an aging workforce, and 60% of family caregivers are juggling their caregiving responsibility with paid work. We also know that family caregivers have foregone $67 billion in earnings, either because their careers have been disrupted, they've changed what they needed to do because they had to take their loved ones to appointments, make sure they were at home, or they've left the labor force in general. And so the business community needs to be concerned about this. With an aging population, you want to incentivize your employees to be able to stay in their jobs. I mean, there's a huge cost to train up individuals, keep them in their positions. And if you have a little bit of flexibility, like the Credit for Caring Act that we're promoting on the national level, that could allow individuals to remain working and helping their loved ones. That's where you're going to see AARP. We're going to start dipping our toes into advocating for a state change to
the way you can get paid for this? Is that what you mean?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So it's a top priority to get it passed on the national level. Mm-hmm. We feel pretty confident the Credit for Caring Act that Congressman Mike Carey is sponsoring will be introduced, will be part of the federal tax package. But we should also turn our attention to state law and what we can do to be able to provide further protections and incentives for working individuals to provide care to their loved ones.
Now, and just before we run out of time, final question, what is AARP doing to help care for the caregivers? Do you offer anything where people can go to your website to learn more, to connect with other people in a similar situation?
Yeah, no, I love that question. We are a highly resourced organization, and so anyone can go to our website mm-hmm. and get resources, and that's the great thing about it. We have a caregiving toolkit that I found to be extraordinarily helpful. It's this checklist. But we've got programs, we've got helpful tools, we have information on respite, how you can connect in the community. We have Facebook groups, we've got local meetups, and you know, we're very much about trying to provide the right tools and make it easier for caregivers to provide the care that they need, as well as making sure that they've got that respite, that they know that they've got protections out there in the community to help their jobs and making things easier for them.
That was Jenny Carlson, AARP State Director of Ohio. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Coming up, we're going to talk about the importance of caregivers taking some time to care for themselves. That's when Untangled continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Untangled, a show from All Sides and WOSU that takes a complicated topic and untangles it for you. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Our look at caregiving continues with a focus on the caregiver. Caring for a loved one can take a physical and emotional toll on the caregiver. It is hard, even for the most resilient of people. So how do caregivers take care of themselves? We're posing this question to Ann Wheat, Executive Director of Duet, Partners in Aging and Health, a nonprofit interfaith organization promoting health and well-being in Arizona. Welcome to All Sides, Anne.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Thank you for joining us. Can you tell me what some of the struggles that are common for those who are taking care of aging relatives?
I certainly can. There's so many of them. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to start by saying that one of the first challenges is that family caregivers often don't self-identify as a family caregiver for 2 or 3 years. And so a lot of the challenges they face, they're doing it alone, and it takes quite a hit on their health and well-being. So here at Duet, we support over 1,000 family caregivers of adults on their journey throughout the whole journey of caring for a loved one. And so we hear a lot about the challenges that they face. And certainly it's multifaceted. First of all, there is a tremendous amount of stress involved in juggling a very complex situation of possibly working, trying to care for an older adult in particular, or a person with a disability. And also sometimes having children that they're caring for as well. The other thing I think is that they are, until they have an awareness of being a family caregiver, they don't reach out for help. And then sometimes they think, I'm the only person who can provide good care for my loved one. And so they'll even be resistant to getting help. So isolation becomes a huge problem. And we all know that that's an epidemic in our country. And for dementia family caregivers or caregivers for adults, it can be with progressive debilitating conditions. It can be particularly time-consuming and stressful. There was a study that came out during the pandemic of really trying to research who was most impacted by isolation. And they asked the question, in the last 30 days, have you considered suicide? And it was family caregivers of adults who had the highest suicide ideation rates at over 30%. So we really all have to care for family caregivers and help support them. It is just too hard of a job to do alone.
Now, you mentioned at the beginning that some people don't even know that they're caregivers. So you don't have to be living with the person and taking care of them 24/7 to still be a caregiver, right?
That is absolutely true. You don't have to live with them or live near them. You can be, there's many family caregivers who are trying to provide care long distance. They may be the primary caregiver, or they may be a sibling who is doing their best to show up when they can from out of state. They're all family caregivers. And there is some research that shows that it can be 2 to 3 years before they identify themselves as a family caregiver. Once they do, they're 90% more likely to reach out for help and support. And that makes all the difference.
Now, when you say reach out for help and support, I mean, this could be just having someone else to talk to who's going through it, or also asking questions like, talking with someone else about strategies for how to do some of this caregiving, because it's not like you take a class on, like, how do I care for my mother?
Right. And it's not like an instruction manual falls out of the sky for you. Like, mm-hmm. you hear the diagnosis and you're just kind of in free fall. And this was my lived experience for 3 family members. So I kind of have that aspect as well as the professional work I'm doing. But yes, it is, it's incredibly challenging and you can't do it alone. And so there are many supports available, but sometimes people live in small towns or areas where there's just no resources available. So when you're so busy, how do you find where you should turn to? And so there are many, many good agencies, AARP certainly, Area Agency on Aging, and even with a lot of medical centers will have supports. With Duet, we had to really tackle this and confront that in-person just wasn't going to work for everyone during the pandemic. And so now about 50% of our services are all virtual, and we have people joining us free of charge for our support groups, for getting a peer mentor, for taking a workshop series, or watching a webinar that's designed just for them, free of charge. They could just hop on. And those kinds of opportunities are becoming more and more available. Certainly, folks are welcome to join through Duet Partners in Health and Aging, or call us and we can probably help them find some local resources so that we could get them connected. Because the sooner they become part of what Dr. Pauline Boss, who has done a lot of work around dementia, caring for someone with dementia and supporting the family caregivers, you need your psychological family, that family of your heart and mind who gets you and is a fellow traveler on this journey, or will support you with empathy and understanding. And that oftentimes doesn't come from our family members, unfortunately. So that is definitely a critical starting point. And if they join a support group, for instance, it's not just they're learning about new resources in each of the meetings, but they have a community, and that community includes people who can share, hey, you know, I had a similar challenge to what you've described. I did this and it worked really well. So then it becomes a mutually supportive group from the trenches, which I think is so very, very important.
This is Untangled from All Sides, and we're talking about caring for the caregivers this hour with Ann Wheat, Executive Director of Duet, Partners in Aging and Health, a nonprofit interfaith organization promoting health and well-being. Your organization, you mentioned you offer both in-person and virtual classes. Some of the situations that are listed on your website is it's a safe place to express frustration, also a place to learn coping strategies. So do you find that a lot of caregivers just feel frustrated and don't know how to talk about it?
Yes. Yeah, so when they first arrive to a support group or come to us, so often you see somebody who feels hopeless, helpless. And when we feel hopeless, when we feel that much stress and we see no way forward that looks more positive than the experience we're having, it really takes a toll on health. And we need to get them connected to restoring meaning and hope in their lives. That is the work of Duet. We work very hard on that to ensure that they are supported throughout that journey. So those things are very, very true. They will come in. It's sometimes even very hard for them to talk about it. Their world has become very narrowed, and their friends tend to not want to hear about the problems or challenges, or they'll just throw them a platitude like, well, you're so lucky your loved one's still alive. Mm. But sometimes that doesn't help. They're very conflicted. We run two workshop series, one featuring Dr. Pauline Boss, who was the groundbreaking theorist on ambiguous loss. And in the case of family caregiving, particularly around dementia, but many other things, it is where you're caring for someone who is physically present, but psychologically absent or missing. And the stress, the compounded stress that piles up from not even having a name for what you're feeling, or being told by a doctor that you need medication because you're clinically depressed, it's really not doing a service to so many of these family caregivers who are just experiencing deep ongoing sadness, and they have every reason to feel it. But the cure for sadness, or the antidote, or the thing that we want them to look at, is community, having a support system, getting knowledge and resources, and then learning to take care of yourself, making time for yourself. It has to start there. The family caregiver has to lean in. And what we find is once they take that first step, they will make time for that support group because it does so much good for them. They will make time for that brief walk during the day because it does so much good. Or staying connected to friends and reaching out, learning new techniques. So our workshop series are based on learning about ambiguous loss, called Finding Meaning and Hope, and teaching them the resiliency-based strategies to say, you can do this, and you can learn these techniques. You could talk about them in a group and ask questions and process it and reinforce these lessons for one another. So that's Finding Meaning and Hope. And then we use the work of Dr. Robert Waldinger, who leads Harvard University's world's longest study on human happiness and successful aging. And he has allowed us to run a program for older adults called Next Chapter in My Life. What happens for family caregivers so often is their view of their lives has become so narrowed to a single identity as a family caregiver. Mm. And we need them to broaden that identity and reconnect with the things they loved in life that brought them meaning and purpose. And that will help them when they're going through that difficult transition to life after being a family caregiver. So these are all the things that we work on, and we know that with a focus solely on helping that family caregiver with their self-care, that the person they love is going to have a better experience as well, because the family caregiver won't be expressing the stress or the anger or the, those things that are rather toxic to them. If they can set that aside, if they can move through it, move past denial to a place of reality and find meaning in the moment and the day, and it can be done, they will find blessings along the way. We do not minimize how hard it is, but it's navigating the ambiguity of your situation and leaning in to what you still have and the good enough relationship. And it's very easy for me to say these words, but it's harder to master them. And so I would just encourage them to reach out. We have trained volunteer facilitators in 17 states to bring this program to family caregivers. And we're happy to help guide people to resources in their neighborhood or how to connect virtually. And so there is help and hope all over. The challenge is finding it. And then I think for family caregivers to lean in and say, I do need help. I do need resources. I do need support. And I'm going to be my best advocate to find them.
Yeah. Do you find you have to sometimes convince a caregiver that self-care or taking time is not selfish, like that they need to do it?
Definitely.
They have to? Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes. We that happens a lot. These are folks who they've leaned into something that's about as hard as anything we're ever asked to do. And they take it very seriously. They throw themselves into it. But sometimes they have this perception that they're the only ones who could care for their person. Mm. And actually, the person they're caring for is also a social human being. And they benefit from having other people around to talk with or visit with, so that it isn't just one single person who they are dependent on. And being so dependent on your spouse or your adult child really changes that dynamic of the relationship. So sometimes when we can bring in others to give us that time to ourselves, just for a nap or a walk or whatever it is that brings you some meaning and joy, some peace, some tranquility, that's what they need. But yes, we do see that all the time. And what is really great about a support group is it's the other family caregivers who say, oh, yep, I was like just like you, but I realized from being at this group and learning how much I need to advocate for myself because others won't do it for me or can't do it for me. And so, you know, we're teaching them how to be assertive enough to tell family members, look, this is what I need from you. You need to give me a break and come on your vacation and take care of mom or whatever that may be.
That's what I was going to ask you. If you're not the primary caregiver, how can you support the other family member who's doing the caregiving? Is that just being available?
You know, we sometimes refer to those folks who are intentionally unavailable. Dr. Boss calls them slackers. And they really need to step up to the plate. It is perfectly reasonable for a primary family caregiver to say, look, what happens if I go down, if my health is so compromised? Guess who's caring for mom now? Mm. It's going to be you. So step up and help me out. Or telling even neighbors or friends who say, what can I do to help? Have that list. You know what? Thank you. I could use your help with a meal. I could use your help with just mowing the lawn so it looks better. I just have so much on my plate. Thank you so much. And I think it's really up to society. I mean, this is what it means to be a member of a community is we know people who are family caregiving. We see them in our faith communities. We see them at work. We see them as our neighbors. So step up, step out, and say, hey, can I just give you a little break? And I'll sit with your husband. Let me do that for you, and you go take a break. We can all do those things, and I think there really needs to be an education to say, you know, this isn't a solo. Nobody does this well alone. It goes on for too many years, and it's just too hard. So we do see that all the time, and we teach them assertiveness, how to reach out and say, especially to their relatives, I need your help. I can't do this alone, and this is how you can help me.
That was Anne Wheat, Executive Director of Duet, Partners in Aging and Health. Thank you for joining us today, Anne.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
And coming up, we're going to talk with someone who has spent part of their life as a caregiver. She'll share her story. That's when Untangled continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Untangled, a show from All Sides and WOSU that takes a complicated topic and untangles it for you. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Thousands of people across Ohio are currently taking care of their older relatives who cannot live on their own. This comes with a plethora of challenges and life adjustments that can be difficult for many. However, one of the best ways to learn how to care for both your relatives and yourself better is by talking with those who are in a similar situation. Joining me now is Karen Hensley Rayburn, an experienced family caregiver. Karen, welcome to All Sides.
Thanks for having me.
Could you tell us your caregiving story, who you were taking care of?
Sure. I was taking care of my mother. My father, my parents lived together, and it was multi-layered as far as the care. My father was well, and my mom's dementia, at first she was just pleasantly aloof. She just didn't remember things, and she realized that she didn't remember things, and that was frustrating. And she was my babysitter for my children when I went back to work. Excuse me. And she came over every day, same time, and had a regular schedule. But then once my son started going to preschool part-time, she kind of started falling off. So instead of every day, Monday through Friday, it was Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And then I remember one day I was leaving for work and she said, wait, what do you want me to feed him for lunch? And I was like, you know, whatever you usually, just anything, you know, because I thought it was a weird question.
Yeah.
But she came over every day at the same time and just was very structured with what she did with my son. And even those 2 days off just kind of rocked the boat to where she was driving home one day and couldn't remember how to get home. And she was over every day for years because she took care of both kids, you know, one and then the other one went to school. And then so, you know, we thought it was odd, but then it didn't happen again for a while, so it wasn't a big deal. And then eventually, once he went to school full time, it just kind of like landed on you like an elephant. You know, I talked to her every day, like several times a day. And, you know, I'd say, well, what are you doing? Oh, just a little of this, a little of that. And she said that like every time I talked to her every day.
And you were like, be specific. And,
yeah.
and she couldn't.
Yeah. But she lost structure.
Yeah.
And she didn't know how to create it. In a different setting for herself. And we just saw this decline like really happen. And so as far as the caregiving part for my dad, you know, he liked to golf and he'd go Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. He'd worry about her, you know, and at first she could still drive, but then you kind of were worried that maybe that's not a good idea. You know, so everything he did, he would rush. You know, he tried to go to the grocery store while she was asleep. And he kind of lost the role as husband and had to, you know, just take care of her completely. You know, when to take a shower, help her get into her night clothes. You know, he had to cook everything. And they used to take turns cooking. So I watched my father decline. And he had to be depressed because this was his wife of over 50 years, and they become not the same person. They're a shell of who you knew. And every now and then you'd have moments where you saw like, oh, you know, but then it would go right back. Like music was always a great thing. My mom always loved music. We always had music in our house growing up, whether my parents were cooking dinner or just anything. We just always had music on. So if you turn music on, my mom would say, she'd just start dancing. Like she was at my house before I was in the bathroom doing my hair, and I could look through the mirror and she was behind me dancing by herself, you know. And so one time it was for her birthday. We had everybody over at their house and she loved Marvin Gaye, and her and my father were dancing. I think the song is You've Got to Give It Up.
Okay.
And my dad always says, this song will kill you. It's like 7 minutes long, you know. So everyone's dancing and everything. My mom had a great time. I called her later in the evening. I go, how was your day? She goes, oh, it was okay.
Oh, she didn't remember.
She didn't remember.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah. And my heart kind of sunk. But while she was in it,
yeah,
she was excited. She was smiling. She loved being around family.
Yeah,
she was anxious when she wasn't around family because she'd smile and everybody's like, "Oh, she seems fine," and she'd smile and say, "Who was that?"
Yeah. So did you eventually, did you have to quit a job in order to help out, or how did what happened with you?
So for me, I asked my dad to have someone help him because as I was listening to the earlier part of the show, what if something happens to you?
Yeah.
And he said, I can take care of my wife. I don't need help. Mm. So my part in all of this was my kids were small. I had two small children. I had two older brothers. Each of them had one child, and we were all working. So the brunt of it was on Dad, but you know, we all lived in close proximity so that it didn't all have to be on him. So I just scheduled a caregiver, like a medical assistant.
To come into the house?
To come to the house, because I kept asking him, and he just kept saying no. So I just said, go over there at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
And, you know, he said, nope, we didn't ask for anyone. Thanks, you know, take care. And then there's like, no, Mr. Hensley, I'm supposed to be here. And he said, wait, did someone named Karen send you? Yeah. And so, you know, I showed up 15 minutes later after I thought he wouldn't be as upset.
Good strategy.
Yeah. And so I said, you know, come on Monday at, you know, 9 to 11 and Tuesday 11 to 1 and Wednesday. I had this crazy schedule. And he said, that schedule's ridiculous. And I said, well, then what would work?
Oh, you see, and I see what you did there. You let him come up with a schedule.
Right.
Wow. All right. That's smart. Yeah.
And so, you know, but it's uncomfortable. You know, he's worried that some stranger is in the house by themselves with his wife, who isn't completely herself anymore.
Yeah.
So is she going to be safe? And I said, then just stay at home with them until you get to know her and get comfortable.
Yeah.
And he did, and he got comfortable, and she'd paint mom's nails, and they'd go on a walk, or they'd make brownies. Like, we still keep in touch with her. We love her.
Aw.
I mean, we were fortunate,
yes,
you know, that we were able to have the same person. At first, we didn't. We had different people. But once we got the same person and got a routine, because it was like Groundhog Day with my mom. If it wasn't her family, she just didn't remember you.
Yeah.
And she'd say, she seems really sweet, but I don't know who she is, you know.
Was it important to you and your family to be able to keep your mom in her home?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. My mother's mom lived with us when I was little because her dad died. And then my father's mom lived with us when I was in college. So we just, it's a, you know, culture of taking care of your own.
Yes.
Even, even if it's to your demise, unfortunately, you know, because it takes its toll.
Yes. Do you have any advice for someone who has an aging parent who has signs of dementia? What would you say to them is an important thing to do, you know, as they're getting started at this new reality where they realize they have to help more? What was a lessons learned?
Absolutely. So I would say even before then, everyone needs to get a baseline of their cognitive abilities, you know, and there's just a simple test. And the name of it is escaping me now, and I know that I'm going to get beat up for not remembering the name.
Okay.
There's it's on paper, and in your doctor's office would even have it, and they just keep it in your file, and then you take it again and see, you know, what's changed. Mm-hmm. Because with mom, the disconnect was, is it aging or is it dementia?
Yeah.
Because as you get older, you forget things and you're not as sharp as you used to be. So there was some of the disconnect. So what I would say for people early on is from the beginning, get help.
Yes.
And that could start with family members, because family members, sometimes they might not be comfortable if they haven't done it. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what she needs, or because it's different. It's not the same person that they're used to. So you're not going to just sit and chat and watch a show together or whatever, because the interaction is totally different. So it's kind of uncomfortable if they're not used to it. So if from early on everybody is involved in some way or another, even if the involvement is knowing what you're doing, then it's easier for other people to fill in.
So to have that network of people you can call on. So if you're having a bad day, or if your dad was having a bad day, mm-hmm. you could call more than one person to say, you know, come over here and sit with mom.
But yeah. he wouldn't call.
Right.
So you have to check in. You have to show up. You have to just show up. Because if you called, you're going to get the same, it's fine, we're yeah. doing fine. And they're mine. It is fine. I'm holding it together. We've eaten, you know, we've got groceries. But you just kind of need to be physically present and lay eyes on things to know what's really going on. And when you offer help, usually your help, you know, it'll be thanks, but no thanks. Mm. So it's more like, I'm going to cut your grass today. Or you just look out, someone looks outside and sees their grass getting cut.
Mm.
You just kind of just need to jump in. If you see something that needs to be done, do it. Because if you offer or ask if something needs to be done, most often the answer will be no, because, you know, the caregiver wants to think that they're able to still maintain everything the way it's always been.
So you had to become more aggressive in your relationship with your dad, basically.
I did.
And you had to not accept no for an answer.
Right. And I had to do things that he might not have been happy with, but I worried about his quality of life, too, mm-hmm. Because he mattered to me, matters to me as yeah. well, you know. And so that was kind of tough, you know, because I didn't want him to be upset with me. But I could see how it was wearing on him. And, you know, they were both older. Yeah. So, you know, he needed care, too. But when you're in the throes of it, you don't know. So at one point, my mom had a stroke. And she ended up having to go to memory care because mm-hmm. she was in a wheelchair and we no longer could care for her at home. But she had a minimum of 3 to 4 visits a day between my siblings. There's 3 of us and my dad. And it just kind of gave us peace of mind. Mm-hmm. So for each meal, because she couldn't feed herself. So for each meal, somebody was there to feed her. And, you know, sometimes at night after my shower and I tuck my kids in bed, I just go and tuck her in or, you know, get a look, because that's what it was like growing up, you know, and it just made me sleep better, you know. So we tried to have the same life as if she was still under the same roof for the most part. You know, the interactions were plentiful. And I think that made us accept the fact that she was in better hands. It was safer for her to be there.
You could see it. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, but sure. I want to thank you so much for coming. Thank you to Karen Hensley Rayburn. Thank you for telling us about your caregiving journey.
Sure. Thank you for the opportunity.
This has been Untangled Caregiving from All Sides in WOSU Public Media. Join us next time when we'll discuss public policy, what the state and federal government can do to better care for our aging population. You can hear all the episodes in this series about caregiving by subscribing to the Untangled podcast. Support for Inside Caregiving is powered by the Storytellers Trust. I'm Amy Jurevich. This is 89.7 NPR News and WOSU Public Media.